You are listening to On The Daily, the RotoViz Daily Fantasy Sports Podcast, powered by RotoViz Radio.
Hey everyone, I'm Matt Friedman, Matt F. The Oracle of Fantasy Labs and RotoViz. Welcome to the November 4th, 2017 NASCAR edition of On The Daily. I'm joined by Dr. Nick Giffen, an editor at RotoViz, a PhD in mathematics, a three-time qualifier for the DraftKings NASCAR main event, and one of the best NASCAR DFS players in the world. You can follow him on Twitter at RotoDoc. Nick, it has been a long time since we talked. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Obviously, NFL and life and holidays and birthdays and all that stuff got in the way the past couple weeks, but excited to be back in the saddle, so to speak, and or back in the driver's seat, I guess we should say.
There you go.
Yeah, last three races of the season, Texas, Phoenix, and Homestead, man, and that's a wrap on the 2017 season. I'm excited.
Yeah, so it's a fantastic. So I mean, last time we talked, Charlottesville, and there have been a number of races since then.
Charlottesville, I think you mean Charlotte.
Charlotte. My mistake. They all blend together on a Friday night.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, but we are back. So this weekend we have a race at Texas Motor Speedway. The last time we did a podcast, you were in the third round of the Fantasy Racing World Championship, and I hate to bring that up. Had 10 people playing down to five. How did things turn out for you? I ask, even though I know the question.
Yeah.
The answer to the question.
Exactly. So it was all right. I mean, I was pretty excited. I liked my lineup. Spent a lot of time on it, and I was one of two people to have Kevin Harvick at this race at Charlotte, and it just seemed to set up well for him in terms of where I expected him to dominate. And out of the 10 of us, only myself and NS Mafia, you know, probably the greatest NASCAR player of all time, DFS player of all time. Only me and him had Kevin Harvick, and Harvick dominated a very, very large portion of the race. I also wanted to get Kyle Busch in because I figured he could dominate as well if Harvick didn't. And of course, I wanted to get Truex in because he was just the chalk play. So I jammed the three of them in there. Turns out Harvick, because he was 20% owned, led a lot of the race. I was in first place for a portion of that race, and I was happy. Kyle Busch ended up leading about 20-30 laps at one point. Harvick got back out front again, and so things were looking good. I was sitting there in first place, and then Kyle Busch hit the wall. And then Kyle Busch hit the wall again, and then Kyle Busch hit the wall again, and it was over. Kyle Busch was 50% owned, so that means five people did not have him. Those five people went through. I was the first of the five people to have Kyle Busch not to make it through. I still had some chances. Like if just anybody else out of like seven or eight different drivers had a problem, I still could have made it through. Unfortunately, none of those other drivers did have a problem. I mean, guys like Stenhouse, Keselowski, Larson, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If any of these guys had had a problem, I would have made it through, but didn't work out that way. I'm very happy with my lineup. I'm very happy with my process. I gave myself a incredibly high floor with all the dominator points that I was able to pick up between Truex, who actually won the race, and then Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick. Just unfortunately, Kyle Busch happened to hit the wall. So that's the way it goes. I can't really complain. Actually, I still probably wouldn't have changed a thing. I could have been competing at Talladega, and the lineup I chose for my cash game lineup at Talladega probably would have won the $50,000, but that's okay. I'm not bitter or anything at all.
Yeah, it's a high variance sport. So as we mentioned at the top, NASCAR heads to Texas Motor Speedway for the second race there of the season and the second race of the third round of the NASCAR playoffs. Nick, give us a quick overview of the playoff standings.
Yeah, so actually before we do that, I wanted to congratulate Gamals, who actually won the Fantasy Racing World Championship. Awesome lineup. And then also Evil Surge came in second. He's been a RotoViz subscriber, a good friend of mine on Twitter. So he came in second. Very great lineup. Almost the exact same lineup I would have used. So just a really great job there for those guys. So congratulations to them on their first and second place showing in the Fantasy Racing World Championship. As far as the playoff standings go for NASCAR, we're down to eight drivers, right? So Kyle Larson actually had an engine blow in one of the races in the prior round, I think it was at Kansas, and did not make it through to the final eight. So Kyle Larson, Matt Kenseth, Kasey Kahne, and Austin Dillon got eliminated in that second round. So now we're in the third round. We're down to eight drivers. We already had one race, and boy, was it a wild race. A ton of crashes, a ton of just crazy stuff happened. And the big story was Denny Hamlin wrecking Chase Elliott when they were in first and second place with just a couple laps to go. Denny Hamlin wrecked Elliott from behind, absolutely just hit him from in the rear and just spun him out. Totally Denny Hamlin's fault. And so Chase wrecked. There was a restart. Denny didn't have the best restart, got passed. Then Ryan Blaney got under Denny on the final corner of the final lap, and Blaney kind of lost it, and then Denny kind of lost it, got into Blaney, and then all mayhem just broke loose coming to the start-finish line. So Blaney wrecked, Harvick wrecked, Johnson wrecked. I mean, basically everybody wrecked. The only people who didn't wreck were Kyle Busch, who won the race, and Brad Keselowski. So, and Martin Truex Jr., I should say. But Truex Kyle Busch won the race, so he's through to Homestead. Kyle Busch is through to the championship round at Homestead. These next two races, he can do whatever the hell he wants. Truex leads in points, and he is 38 points up on the next guy, which is Brad Keselowski. I mentioned Keselowski didn't get involved in that. So Truex is a 38-point lead, and versus fifth place, which is where the cutoff is, Truex has a 67-point lead, so more than a full race. So Truex is just racing to not make mistakes. So I mentioned Truex leads, Keselowski second, 38 points back. Kyle Busch is technically second in points, but he's through. Keselowski third, Harvick fourth. So those are the four that would go through if it were to, you know, if we were going to go to the playoffs, to the final round now. Harvick is 64 points back of Truex, but this is the important part. He's 3 points ahead of Jimmy Johnson for that final transfer spot. So Harvick and then Johnson in fifth. Another 3 points back is Blaney in sixth. 2 points further back is Denny Hamlin in seventh. So you can see from fourth to seventh, they're really jumbled up in points. Only 8 points separate fourth, that final transfer spot, to seventh. And then finally, Chase Elliott, because he got wrecked and didn't have a whole bunch of playoff points, is sitting there in last, 90 points back of Truex and back of Harvick. He is 26 points back. So he has a little bit of work to do, but there are two races to go in this round. So anything can happen, of course.
Okay, we definitely have more we want to talk about with Texas Motor Speedway. Before that, I should remind everyone that you can get a 30% discount to a special NASCAR pass through our NASCAR podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/NASCAR podcast. With that pass, you get unlimited access to all of Nick's premium NASCAR content, and your subscription supports the pod. Okay, Texas Motor Speedway, it is a 1.5 mile quad oval that was reconfigured prior to this year. How did the first Texas race play out? And was it any different than any of the other Texas races prior to the reconfiguration?
Yeah, so, I think the first Texas race was very interesting. There were four drivers that led more than 10% of the laps, which is a bit unusual for Texas. It does usually get three dominators, occasionally gets two, and occasionally, very rarely occasionally gets four, but that was in the old configuration. The track was pretty worn out, and so tires became an issue, of course. And when tires are an issue, just especially like Atlanta, it's twin track back in the day before it got reconfigured. Charlotte and Atlanta are its twins, especially at the high tire wear tracks of Atlanta and then Texas more recently. There could be multiple leaders, but I think this race was a little different. They did lower the banking in turns one and two and widen it out. So it changed the configuration. They did a treatment to kind of make it age 5 years. So, even though the track was brand new, the surface is technically acting like it's 5 years old. And we saw a lot of different leaders. We saw Ryan Blaney lead a large chunk of the race. Kevin Harvick led a good portion of the race, and those drivers started one and two. And Blaney led about 140 laps. Harvick led about 70. And again, drivers starting one and two, even though it wasn't Truex this time, starting up there in the front, the first and second place drivers both dominated portions of the race. So we tend to see that at mile and a half this year. It really is a thing now. Truex was another driver that led a good portion of that race. And Joey Logano led over 10% of the laps as well. That was before Logano's big penalty at Richmond, back when he was doing really well earlier at the beginning of this year. So those were the four drivers that dominated the race, but then a fifth driver actually won the race, and that was Jimmy Johnson. So there was no way you could get all five into your lineup in that Texas DFS contest. But if you had four of those, you were in pretty good shape, and a couple Joe Dirt cheap drivers. So I think we'll probably end up seeing something similar, and it is definitely different from Texas races of the past.
Okay, so because there has been only one Texas race with the new configuration, how are you approaching this race with your model this weekend?
Yeah, so one thing that's really nice is with the NASCAR sim scores that we've been doing all year, I can find similar tracks to Texas. So what I've done is I've taken this, obviously this year's Texas race, and thrown it into the model, and then the four other closest Texas, or I should say tracks to Texas from that year that it had similar, you know, tire age, etc. So that ends up being, for example, Kansas when it was a bit of a younger track, and then Kentucky also ended up being a lot like Texas, especially after the Kentucky reconfiguration. So I've pulled in, just from the sim scores, the closest comparable tracks with surface age being factored in. So, you know, the Kentucky 2016 race counts, but the Kentucky 2012 race doesn't count because of track age and configuration and things like that. So I pulled in those races, and then I did pull in the other Texas races from 2016 and 2015, because that was when we did have lower downforce on these cars as well. And so it gives a balance of old Texas and new Texas and some comparable tracks to new Texas. So that's what I'm using, and that's what I'll be doing to model this weekend.
Interesting. So what are the factors that people should look at to gauge finishing position at Texas?
Yeah, because of the hodgepodge of tracks and the hodgepodge of old Texas, new Texas, new Texas comps, it really just ends up being mostly just mile and a half stuff. What is your mile and a half driver rating this year? What is your year-to-date driver rating? That always comes into play, of course, but really you also want to factor in the mile and a half. For example, a guy like Joey Logano has been a lot better at the mile and a half this year than he's been basically everywhere else. So that's something to kind of keep in mind. But really, honestly, it basically is mile and a half in year-to-date statistics. So it's not too exciting of a model, but it gives still a very good result on out-of-sample data, the R-squared, 0.58. So we like to see that. That's pretty high. It's a little above the median in terms of all the tracks. There's, you know, 20-something tracks in NASCAR, and it's just above the median or mean track R-squared there. So, you know, I think it's a good model, and I think the model will be, we'll talk about it a little later, I think the model will be extremely, extremely important this weekend because of what happened in qualifying.
You talked about the dominators earlier. What are the factors that you're looking at this weekend for dominators at Texas?
So this is really interesting. And as far as dominators at Texas, one thing that I've noticed just in general with the mile and a halfs this year is there's only been 7 dominators at all of the mile and a halfs this year, total, period. So only 7 drivers out of many, many races have dominated at the mile and a halfs this year. And they include Martin Truex Jr., Kevin Harvick, Kyle Busch, which we expect those three, Ryan Blaney, who, as I mentioned, dominated the first Texas race this year, Brad Keselowski, who dominated a lot of the earlier mile and a half ovals this year. Jimmy Johnson has had periods of dominance, although I wouldn't really say dominance as much as kind of coming on late and finishing very high. We talked about the Texas win earlier this year. He didn't lead more than 10% of laps. He led less than 10% of laps when he finished. And then Joey Logano. So those are the only 7. We did not mention Kyle Larson. We did not mention Denny Hamlin, Matt Kenseth, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think the dominators most likely this weekend will come from those 7 drivers, because the same drivers at these mile and a halfs keep dominating the same races. So, I think it's going to come from those 7. Plus, because of the way qualifying happened this weekend, Kurt Busch starts in the pole. Denny Hamlin starts second. Maybe one of those two dominates this weekend. just because they're starting in the front row and they get a great pit stall. So whoever I think kind of gets the lead out of those two in the early going could be a potential dominator. So there's literally only probably eight drivers I would think that have a chance of dominating just based off of the statistics and qualifying and things like that. Well, the way qualifying happened, we can actually throw out another one of those drivers that we'll talk about later. But so yeah, there's only about a handful of drivers that we really should be considering for dominators this weekend, just based off of mile and a half this year. The other things, of course, that are important is starting position. No drivers at mile and a half this year have dominated starting outside of the top 11 starting positions. So we're going to want drivers starting 11th or better. So like I said, when we combine the two, we get a very narrow field of dominators.
Interesting. So it sounds like, I mean, so you're open to the idea that Kurt and Denny starting in the top two would have a chance to dominate. At the same time, you did sound kind of pessimistic about that.
Yeah. I mean, like, they haven't dominated this year at mile and a half. They just haven't, yeah. Right? And, you know, it's been a lot of races. I think we've had, 12 or 13 mile and a half races so far this year. So, I would like to see dominance from these drivers before I feel good about just saying they're going to be a dominator. I think it's more likely that Kurt Busch will be a dominator than Denny, given Kurt Busch has the better driver rating at mile and a half this year, the better average running position at mile and a half this year. But I will say neither of them, like I said, have dominated. Denny Hamlin does have more fastest laps, but it's not that many. He's only had 2% fastest laps this year at mile and a half. So it's tough to use these guys. I mean, you're looking at Kurt Busch, 0.2% laps led at mile and a half this year, 0.7% fastest laps, and he's starting on the pole. You just can't feel that good about it, and especially Denny Hamlin, who doesn't even get lane preference and restart preference and pit stall preference, and has actually had worse driver rating than Kurt Busch this year at the mile and a half. It's very tough to feel confident about those guys, but I think you have to at least consider them, considering they do get the best pit stalls. They do have the early jump on the field at the beginning of the race.
Okay, so all year there have been only seven dominators, and those seven have started 11th or better whenever they've dominated. How are you ranking the dominator candidates this weekend? And let's start with the top three. Who are your top three dominators?
So my top three dominators this weekend, I'm definitely starting with Kevin Harvick. He qualified third, which is obviously, starting forward is very important. And we go back to the most recent mile and a half track, which was at Charlotte, which was the race, of course, that I had my misfortune there.
Charlottesville, Nick.
Yeah, Charlottesville. The Charlottesville Motor Speedway, my hometown that I was born and raised in. The most recent mile and a half track there. Kevin Harvick, I guess, just obviously, he had a strong race. I think he started third there as well. And ended up dominating a good portion of that race. And I think he's better than those two guys in front of him. So, that's kind of what I'm looking at this weekend. I think Kevin Harvick starting in third is in a very good situation to be the main dominator. I think Kyle Busch is interesting because he can just continue to prevent, I guess, other people from running away with this. But even then, playoff points don't matter going into Homestead. So he's just going for a trophy. It doesn't matter if he finishes last. It doesn't matter if he finishes first. The only thing that matters is he can prevent somebody like Martin Truex Jr. from finishing first. But I guess he could be a dominator, but I prefer Truex to Kyle Busch just based off of the mile and a half history this year. So those are my three most likely. So I'd rank him Kevin Harvick 1, Martin Truex Jr. 2, and Kyle Busch 3. Because, like I said, I give the edge to Truex in the mile and a half this year. I do think interesting, I think if I did have to pick a fourth, it would probably be Kurt Busch just because he starts in the pole. And I don't feel great about it. But I feel pretty good about my top three being Harvick, Truex, and then Kyle Busch.
Okay, so it's been a while since we've had a situation in qualifying where multiple big-name drivers didn't pass pre-qualifying inspection, although I feel like it happens all the time. But anyway, this week it happened. So Chase Elliott, Matt Kenseth, Joey Logano, and the biggest name of them all, Trevor Bayne, they all failed to make a qualifying lap. And so they are starting 34th to 37th. So what is your approach this weekend with those drivers?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, Chase Elliott has been, while he hasn't dominated at mile and a half this year, he's been very good at them. And his even last year in his rookie year, he was very good at the mile and a half. So it's so tough because what do you do with these guys back here? You got to play a couple dominators because you need dominator points in a GPP. In cash games, maybe you can just try to nail the one or two dominators and then pick two of these guys. But there's four big names, right? And Trevor Bayne certainly comes at a discount at $7,200, whereas Kenseth is $8,900, Chase Elliott's $9,100, and then Logano's $9,400. The other thing is, you know, Logano's the most expensive of these drivers, and he starts the furthest back. So it's kind of a weird situation where Logano hasn't been as good lately as he was at the beginning of the year, and a couple of those mile and a half that we talked about were at the beginning of this year, the Las Vegas race, the Texas race, the Atlanta race, before he had all of these issues after that Richmond win got encumbered. I really think, you know, those first several races this year, he had an illegal car, and that's why he did so well. And once they found the illegal car at Richmond, when he won that race, they haven't been doing that illegal thing since, and he just hasn't been very good. So I'm kind of inclined to, of the four of them back there, you know, I think I'd probably most likely fade Joey Logano, but I do want to get two, if not three, of these guys in my lineups when possible. If you go Trevor Bayne, you can definitely get three. Otherwise, you probably can only get two in your lineups because you want dominators and because we did see multiple Texas dominators before. I don't think it's a situation where you get three dominators. We probably will see three dominators, but I think the third and fourth dominator, if we do get three or four dominators, will only lead 10-15% of the laps, and I think that can be made up for with a lot of place differential from these guys. So I think you definitely need two of these guys in your lineup relative to the dominators. I think, you know, if you can find a way to get at least two of these back four, then you can choose however many dominators you can fit in, but I would definitely want two, and sometimes even three if you're throwing in Trevor Bayne there. And I would probably, of the three, pick Joey Logano, of the four, I should say, pick Joey Logano last, just because his more recent mile and a half history this year hasn't been good as his first half of the year mile and a half history before that encumbered win at Richmond. And he's the most expensive. The thing is, he does start further back, but it's only one spot difference, whereas Matt Kenseth, $8,900, the cheapest, is a spot further forward, and then one spot further forward, and that is Chase Elliott, who's just had a fantastic year, still alive in the playoffs, and maybe could get revenge on Denny Hamlin in one of these next couple of races.
Oh, okay, so I have a couple of clarifying questions here. So one, if you had to have either three dominators or three of these place differential guys starting at the back, which are you prioritizing?
I would prioritize three at the back, but only because if you do three dominators, I think you can only get one of these guys at the back. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could do maybe if you find like cheaper dominators. Like I think Harvick is cheaper. So if you did something like Harvick and maybe like Jimmy Johnson, who has an outside chance to dominate, or Keselowski, one of those two, or three of those guys, I should say, then maybe you can get away with something like Trevor Bayne and Chase Elliott. But I'm not even sure. I haven't plugged that into DraftKings or anything to see if that's even possible. So I would prioritize three from the back because, like I said, that third dominator is A, not guaranteed. B, if it does happen, won't be a major dominator.
Right.
And then C, I think the place differential guy can more than make up for it. And D, if you're doing three place differential, you're getting salary relief with one of them in Trevor Bayne.
Okay, so I think you said that of these four, you would rank Logano fourth. But how do you rank all four of these guys, considering not just their finishing potential, but also their salary and what that means for your ability to put in dominators and other types of drivers?
Yeah, I would definitely rank Chase Elliott number one. He's only $200 more expensive than Matt Kenseth, and he's only one spot further ahead of Matt Kenseth in qualifying position, which is based off points, and obviously Chase Elliott's ahead of Matt Kenseth in points. So I'd rank him ahead of Matt Kenseth, and I definitely would rank him ahead of Trevor Bayne, just because Chase Elliott has, you know, possibly race-winning upside. I think there's plenty of things going on here, but between Trevor Bayne and Matt Kenseth, it really comes down to, is that $1,700 salary difference enough to make up for the potential upside, I guess. And I think in a race like Texas, where there is a good amount of predictability, but not total predictability. Like I said, it's just above the median. And we did see four dominators the first race this year. It's super splitting hairs, but I think I prefer Trevor Bayne to Matt Kenseth. But in terms of roster construction, and we'll talk about this when we get to the Joe Dirt Cheap segment, I think I prefer Kenseth to Bayne just based off roster construction. So what I'm saying here is, I think I prefer Bayne in terms of like a points per dollar type of deal in the long run, like on average. But I think the way roster construction works out, it doesn't make sense to sacrifice, let's say, whatever, 5, 7, 12 points from Kenseth to Trevor Bayne. Like, even if, you know, if Kenseth finishes 12 points ahead of Trevor Bayne, he's still not going to be better in terms of a value perspective, but it still is 12 points more than Bayne. And then you can just drop down to some Joe Dirt Chiefs with the rest of your lineup. So I prefer Trevor Bayne in terms of value, but I think I prefer Matt Kenseth in terms of roster construction.
Okay, interesting. So between the dominators and the place differential drivers, it seems like there's not much room for other drivers. How much are you even considering other drivers in GPPs?
Very little, honestly. I think you can make a case for maybe two other drivers. I think you can make a case outside of Joe Dirt. I think you can make a case for Clint Bowyer, who starts 20th. Obviously, his teammate, Kevin Harvick, starts 3rd. And they look like they've, you know, the Fords look pretty good with Kurt Busch starting on the pole and Kevin Harvick starting 3rd, which are both of Bowyer's teammates there. Even Danica Patrick, you know, starts 14th. So I think you can make a case for Clint Bowyer, and I think you can make a case for Ryan Newman, but Ryan Newman hasn't been the best mile and a half this year, but he does start 25th. So, like, if something crazy were to happen at Texas and three of these drivers were to have problems, I think Ryan Newman could potentially be a driver you could look at. Maybe a driver like Ty Dillon as well, who starts 27th and actually hasn't been terrible at the mile and a half this year. He's been okay. I think, like, really outside of those three, even those three, I wouldn't use them a ton. I don't think, unless we get a surprise dominator, I don't think any of these other guys have a chance at being in the winning lineup. I mean, you're looking at one of these seven drivers that we named, plus either Kurt Busch or Denny Hamlin. So those nine starting up there, or well, I guess nine potential dominators. But Logano is not a potential dominator because he starts so far back, but he's a place differential guy. Then you're adding in those other three drivers starting far back in addition to Logano. So you're talking 12 drivers that we're really considering this weekend. Then I think you can throw in maybe two or three other names tops outside of the Joe Dirt cheap tier. So very narrow pool this weekend, but I mean, it doesn't make sense to play it any other way. Really, like, you're not going to start Erik Jones in 4th. You're not going to play Daniel Suarez, who's starting 6th. You're not going to play, maybe you could play somebody like Kyle Larson, who starts 11th, but he isn't dominated this year. So it's so hard to play Kyle Larson knowing he's never dominated a mile and a half track this year, really. So super tough weekend, but I think you have to keep a very narrow player pool.
Okay, so you mentioned some the possibility of putting in some Joe Dirt cheap drivers. Let's talk about them. Which drivers are you looking at to be your Joe Dirt cheap plays for this race?
Well, here's the funny thing. So we talked about how Chase Elliott and Kenseth, Logano, and Bayne didn't qualify, and they only start 34th through 37th. That means there's three drivers starting behind them, and those three happen to be Joe Dirt cheap drivers that also did not turn a qualifying lap, and they are Reed Sorensen, Corey LaJoie, and Greg Galding. The nice thing about that is They're not on the more expensive side of the Joe Dirt cheap tier, like your Landon Castles or your Michael McDowells or anything like that, David Reagan's, Matt DiBenedetto's, McDowell, whatever. They're on your cheaper side of the Joe Dirt cheap tier, so they perfectly allow you to get in guys like Kyle Busch or Truex or you know, these expensive guys starting in the back, Elliott, Kenseth, Logano, etc. So those are the three we're looking at. That's it. I mean, that's literally it from the Joe Dirt cheap tier. You're looking at Reed Sorensen, Corey LaJoie, and Greg Golding. They're starting 38th, 39th, and 40th, respectively. And the nice thing is Sorensen's only $5,000. LaJoie is $5,300. Sorry, $5,400. And then Greg Golding is only $4,900. So, like I said, they're all on the cheaper portion of this tier, of this Joe Dirt cheap tier. And so those are the only three you're going to consider, because they're going to move ahead of guys like, I mean, I don't think I even know who this guy is. Ray Black Jr. Is starting.
You don't know who Ray Black Jr. is?
Ray Black the second, I should say. Not even Jr., the second. David Starr. Yeah, so, you know, Jeffrey Earnhardt, we all know who he is. He's an Earnhardt. But Joey Gase, like, I think they're going to move ahead of these guys, most likely. So that's at least 3 to 4 spots that some of these guys, Greg Golden, Corey LaJoie, Reed Sorensen, could pick up. Not guaranteed, but could pick up. And guaranteed, David Starr, Jeffrey Earnhardt, Ray Black, and Joey Gase will fall behind Chase Elliott, Matt Kenseth, Joey Logano, and Trevor Bayne. Whereas, you know, Reed Sorensen, Corey LaJoie, and Greg Golden cannot fall behind those drivers because they're already behind them. So I think those are the only three guys you can consider. So we're talking about, I mentioned maybe 12 guys that aren't Joe Dirt cheap, plus another 2 or 3 you could, like, sprinkle in, so that's 15, and then 3 Joe Dirt cheap drivers. We're talking about like an 18 driver player pool this weekend that you should be using tops.
Okay, so if you had to rank the 3 Joe Dirt cheap candidates, how are you ranking them?
Yeah, I think this is the first time we've ever ranked Joe Dirt cheap candidates.
Yeah, first time we've ever had enough really for them to be ranked.
Yeah, well, I think I'm just going to essentially rank them by price. Greg Golding, $4,900, starts dead last. So he's the cheapest of the three, and he starts the furthest back of the three. He can only go up, so I'm going to pick him. The question is, do you rank LaJoie or Sorensen next? Because LaJoie starts a spot further back, but he's $400 more expensive. He's actually $5,400. I said 53 earlier. $5,400. I take the price discount with Reed Sorensen, and you know, I know Sorensen will be slower than LaJoie, but there's also a reliability factor and a price factor you have to consider. LaJoie does crash a lot. He also, you know, is on a team that hasn't been very reliable, neither is Sorensen, but just the fact that there is a bunch of randomness with these back marker guys, I'll take the $400 discount. So I'm going Golding, Sorensen, and then LaJoie for my Joe Dirt cheap order.
Fantastic. So we cannot end a podcast with those being the final drivers you talk about. So let's talk about who you think is going to win the race.
Yeah, this is really interesting because, you know, Kyle Busch, we talked about him. He just won the most recent race here. Martin Truex Jr. has been the man at mile and a half. Kevin Harvick starts third. He dominated Charlotte, which is kind of the sister track here before the reconfig. It's still the same shape, just a bit different on the banking and the surface age now. But I think it comes down to those three, and I don't see how you can bet against Martin Truex Jr. at a mile and a half track. So pick to win Martin Truex Jr. We mentioned in terms of dominator ranking, I think Harvick's most likely, and I think Truex is second most likely. That's just because of starting position. Harvick starting further forward. I think he gets the early lead away from either Kurt Busch or Denny Hamlin after 20, 30 laps. And then eventually later in the race, Martin Truex Jr. takes over, which is exactly what happened at Charlotte. So Truex, my pick to win, and locks himself in the Homestead. And so we'll have Kyle Busch and Martin Truex Jr. in Homestead after this race.
Follow-up question. Probably too far in advance to really prognosticate this, but I'm going to ask nevertheless, who do you think the final four are going to be? So you've already named two. Who do you think the other two are going to be?
Yeah, this one's really tough because we talked about those four drivers that are kind of smashed together. I think as long as Brad Keselowski keeps his nose clean, he'll be another driver. So I'm going to go with Truex, Kyle Busch, and Keselowski as three almost like guaranteed guys. After that, it's really anybody's game between Chase Elliott, who is the furthest back, but I still think he can make up some ground, but qualifying, of course, here doesn't help. So I'm going to rule him out, even though I still think he can. And so it's going to come down to either Harvick, Jimmy Johnson, or who's the other driver? Blaney there. I think Blaney probably a little inexperienced, and Jimmy Johnson hasn't looked the strongest this year, so I'm going to go with Harvick. But I don't feel like super comfortable with it. But a final four of Keselowski, Harvick, Truex, and Kyle Busch would be maybe outside of Larson the best four drivers this year. So I think that would be an exciting final four, and that's going to be my picks.
Awesome. There's going to be a RotoViz live show, correct?
Probably. So.
Maybe. Uh-oh.
Yeah. So
maybe I shouldn't have brought this up.
There probably will be. I would say there's a 90% chance of there being a RotoViz live show. Last week there wasn't, of course, because qualifying at Martinsville took place 2 hours before the race. So, not enough time to to do anything. I just had to get the model up on the website. But I'm pretty sure we'll have one at the 4 p.m. Pacific time, 7 p.m. Eastern time. Like 90% sure. But follow my Twitter, RotoDoc, to make sure.
All right, that is going to do it for this NASCAR edition of On the Daily. For Nick Giffen on Twitter at RotoDoc, I'm Matt Friedman, Matt at the Oracle. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you for listening to On the Daily, the RotoViz Daily Fantasy Sports Podcast, powered by RotoViz Radio. And special thanks to Randy E. Aguabo for the introduction. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the established RotoViz Radio feed. Contact us via email onthedailydfs@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter @onthedailydfs.